Hello, respected viewers, it's George from Ireland. Welcome back to the channel once again. This video is about the Russo-Ukrainian War, which has been going on for 2 years, 9 months exactly. We just passed that 1,000-day mark. There is a lot of talk about peace negotiations. There are rumors in the media about peace feelers put out, back channels, it's all deniable. The diplomats not necessarily meeting each other, a Ukrainian diplomat saying something to the government, whichever country, the Russian diplomat saying something to the government of that third country, messages passed back and forth. I remember Jerry Kelly, terrorist in Northern Ireland, saying, well, don't have too many back channels because it can be confusing. Who are these back channels? Now, there's a bit of conjecture here, but the peace feelers previously, or negotiations about other issues like prisoners of war exchanges, have been via Middle Eastern countries mostly. In the first few days of the war, the Ukrainians was talking whilst fighting in Belarus, but also in Turkey. Then they broke that off in July 2022. Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates, they have played the honest broker, and they've got some of the children kidnapped by Russia to be returned to their parents. And indeed, they have managed to mediate prisoner of war exchanges. The prisoner of war exchanges go via Belarus. So Ukrainian prisoner of war taken by bus into Belarus, Russian prisoner of war taken by the Ukrainians up to the Belarusian border, and then exchanged on a one-for-one basis. But so what are the issues to be thrashed out at this? And I really think there are 8 issues. 1, land. 2, armaments. 3, international relations. 4, Ukraine's domestic laws. 5, prisoners of war. 6, hostages. 7, reparations. And 8, war crimes trials. So they're not necessarily in order, especially as Putin said at the beginning that Russia would never claim a single millimeter of Ukrainian land. Well, I knew that that was an absolute lie, and I proved to be correct, because only 7 months later, Russia staged these rigged referenda, and then they proclaimed that 4 more regions of Ukraine were integrated into the Russian Federation. I don't think it's recognized by a single sovereign state. Russia, which jealously guards its own independence and says non-interference is part of its foreign policy, was always interfering in the foreign policy of other countries. And I know they're not the only ones. So Russia already controls 20% of Ukrainian territory, and that is an uncomfortable reality we're going to have to deal with, because Ukraine is not pushing them out. Indeed, Ukraine is being pushed back. Admittedly, Ukraine's done a bit better recently than I thought. The Russian offensive has slowed down, is gaining hundreds of meters a day. I'm surprised Ukrainians have managed to hold on to Pokrovsk. I thought they were going to lose it in October. Here we are, almost the end of November, and they still haven't quite been pushed out. But if the war continues, it is a matter of time. Will they hold it to the end of December? Probably not. Will they hold it to the end of spring? I'd be mightily impressed if they could. Nobody's even talking about a Ukrainian counteroffensive in 2025. This is damage limitation. And so it depends how much territory you have. That tells you how strong a negotiating position you're in. Can you give away land or what? Or keep the land, give other concessions, get something else, get more land or what? No matter who you are, Ukraine or Russia. So, but Ukraine getting its land back is going to be difficult, and not just militarily, because the Russian constitution states that Russia can never succeed a single millimeter of its territory. And to even suggest giving away land, to even suggest independence for any region, is so-called extremism in Russia, and therefore criminalized. Expressions of opinion are criminalized in Russia. Bear in mind that the Russian constitution expressly outlaws censorship. And of course, Russia has censorship. But how does Russia back down from this maximalist position? So it's hard to see them getting much of this. Now, a compromise could be to create an independent called East Ukraine. Even that would be a breach of the Russian constitution. A condominium or something like that. Give extensive autonomy to these regions. Now, 3 of those 5 regions already had this. Crimea had it, and obviously Ukraine lost that in 2014. Luhansk and Donetsk had it under Minsk 1 and Minsk 2. a demilitarized zone, as Trump suggests in these occupied regions. Well, obviously, he's never read a history book because it didn't work in Korea or Vietnam. We know that Russia is not going to demilitarize it. Russia wants to demilitarize Ukraine. Now, the Russians have spectacularly failed to do so. Ukraine is more militarized than ever before, and to overthrow the government. And indeed, they failed in that as well. Denazify, as they said that. Well, obviously, well, denazification should start at home because there's Putin's Nazi regime. Zelensky's is absolutely not. Has had free and fair elections and an independent judiciary and a free media, which often slates him and so on. It means they've had to delay the election because of the war situation. And that's another thing, is that's untenable. That can't go on forever, despite the war, despite the martial law. But obviously, Russia would try and hack the election, would try and have bogus votes, would pump out a lot of disinformation. Electoral rallies couldn't be held. They'd be targeted. Things like that. Polling stations would be targeted. So it's very, very difficult. But and Putin has also said that he's not a valid interlocutor because he's illegitimate now. Zelensky's now beyond his electoral term. Yeah. And Putin, who has cheated massively in his elections, has somehow got democratic legitimacy. It's just nauseating. But so that's a difficult thing to figure out. And then also armaments. Would they agree to limit their armaments or to only have a certain number of troops within, say, 50 kilometers of the border or what? Or that Ukraine would say, OK, we agree we'll never develop nuclear, biological or chemical weapons, because now the Ukrainians are talking about doing that. A primitive nuclear device, a suitcase bomb, a dirty bomb. Also saying to NATO countries, if you don't give us conventional weapons, we're going to have to go nuclear. And that would break the nuclear taboo. And if we go nuclear, Russia will go nuclear, who else will go? So the only way to prevent that is you have to arm us to the teeth. But Ukraine obviously says they need more arms because of their ultra aggressive neighbor. Why on earth should they be disarmed when the Russians have one of the largest armies in the world and massively increasing defense spending? So that's another issue to be hammered out. So what matters here is obviously military capability. The stronger are, the more of your aims you're going to achieve. And the other one is also political will. Do you have the political will to go on fighting? Are you willing to risk fighting or not? It's not logic, and morality doesn't have much to do with it. It's often political capability, sort of military capability. And obviously, it's just brute force. That's all that the Putin regime cares about. International relations. Does Ukraine get to join the European Union and or NATO? Obviously, Ukraine is a sovereign state, is absolutely entitled to determine and conduct its own foreign policy. Even Putin said so in 2022 when the European Union made Ukraine a candidate member. But obviously, Putin's always talking out of both sides of his mouth. But in every other way, Putin behaves that Ukraine is a recalcitrant Russian province. You may have read his monograph on the historic unity of the Russian Ukrainian peoples. But he attempts to control Ukraine foreign policy by diktat. So Ukraine's not going to get into the European Union for at least 10 years. All 27 EU member states would have to approve. Slovakia and Hungary are openly opposed. So Ukraine is too big in population. It's too poor, too corrupt. And it borders countries through which illegal immigrants would come, Belarus and Russia. Russia has used illegal immigrants to punish the European Union by sending them to EU states. I mean, I met a Congolese and she crossed the Belarusian border with the assistance of the Belarusian security forces into Poland illegally, met by somebody with a car, paid him thousands of euros to drive her all the way to France to claim asylum, because they can weaponize illegal immigrants. And Russia and Belarus have done this as a way to punish the EU for sanctions and things like that. They recognize how sensitive it is in European politics. So it's the poorest country in Europe. I mean, wider Europe, like including Armenia and so on, Ukraine. So there'll be a lot of skepticism about them joining. I think they will eventually get to join, but it probably will be more like 20 years. Turkey's been waiting since 1987 before there even was a European Union. Back then was a European Economic Community. So negotiations frozen with them. This one's going to be very difficult. But Russia might say, we don't object to joining the EU, but we're vetoing NATO. It's obviously not up to Russia. It's not Russia's business. Ukraine can do whatever they want. Back off. Shut up. Nothing to do with you. You don't like it. Tough. Russia formed the Collective Security Treaty Organization. And no, they didn't seek Ukraine's permission to do so. And they don't need to. Sovereign equality, which is the tiniest sovereign state. The Vatican is equal to the mightiest sovereign state or the most populous one. India, the one with the most territory. China or what? Russia, whatever. So sovereign states, however enormous, however tiny, they all have the right to conduct their own foreign policy, to issue passports, to sign treaties, to establish embassies, and so forth. That is what sovereign equality is. Okay, so we go on to Ukrainian laws. Would it bring back Russian as a co-official language? Or would it be a regional language in Donetsk, Luhansk, and Crimea? Because this is how Russia's wars really backfired. The Russian language has been degraded as never before. Would Ukraine permit dual citizenship? At the moment, it doesn't. Would it outlaw the glorification of Nazism? Of course, in Russia's eyes, that means Ukrainian patriotism. Any Ukrainian who says Ukraine is a nation, they want Ukrainian independence, they don't want to be oppressed by Putin, that's Nazism in the view of Putin. So they might want to think about their internal laws. Stop anti-Russian propaganda, as you said, which would be called history by any fair-minded person. Hostages, 17,000 Ukrainian children kidnapped by Russia, at least 17,000, and some adult civilians are still there. They're a bargaining chip. Do they get returned? And remember, that was the basis of the International Criminal Court's warrant for the arrest of Vladimirovich Putin. They went with that one first, even though more heinous crimes like mass murder, because it's the easiest to prove, because it's a slam dunk. They announced it on Russian television. They showed the images of children getting on buses and so on, and they said they were doing it. If someone accuses you of the crime and you say, yeah, we do it, and you provide proof positive, well, that's it. You did it. The others are contestable. They claim the Bucha massacre wasn't them, even though, again, it's proven beyond a penumbra of doubt that they did do it. But there's at least the denial. With this one, there's no denial. Okay, so there's that one. Would that would the hostages come back? But Putin would want something in return. And then we know they're kidnapped because some of them have already been returned. Oh, they've been taken for their own safety. So the parents are still alive, good parents. Sometimes they were taken from orphanages who didn't have parents, or indeed the parents are told they're going to a summer camp and they never come back, being sent to Siberia, had their been given false identity documents, changing their name, their date of birth, their place of birth, to deracinate them, to cut them off from their heritage, to make them untraceable. Okay, prisons of war. There are several thousand. There have been several exchanges, but all prisons of war should be released as soon as practicable at the end of the war. Now, Russia may well keep someone and claim they're dead. They're tradable assets, they recognize. 4 years after the end of the Armenian-Azerbaijan war, there are hundreds of Armenian POWs still in Azerbaijan. So, reparations. The cost of rebuilding Ukraine is at least $200 billion already, at least, and growing every single day. Russia should pay the damage, pay the cost of cure, because Russia did so entirely. Will they pay? They'll obviously try and get out of it. But what's going to happen about confiscating their assets or something like that until this is paid? Okay, war crimes trial. There were many massacres of civilians, many. Some prisoners of war were tortured. Some prisoners of war were murdered. Torture is absolutely standard practice of the Russian army. A high majority of Ukrainian POWs report being tortured by beatings, electric shocks, stress positions, and so on. So there were rapes committed by Russian soldiers. And I'm not saying that no Ukrainian soldier did everything wrong. And by the way, I'm not saying that all Russian soldiers did this, or even most. But there is ample testimony about this. And we have previous, where they've done this in Chechnya against their own citizens. So those who committed war crimes must face justice, before which tribunal. Now, Russia prohibits the extradition of its citizens to face trial abroad. And we know that trials in Russia are absolutely farcical. They tried a dead man, Sergei Magnitsky. A man with a very modest income was found guilty of stealing $800 million. So, you know, Russia's been in favor of international military tribunals before, for the Far East, Nuremberg, even Rwanda, even the former Yugoslavia, but somehow not for their own people, a bit like the Americans, that one. But if they're let off with that, what are they going to give in concession elsewhere? So these are the things to be agreed. There may well be constructive ambiguities, as in so language which was unclear, so it'll be misinterpreted by one side. Sanctions, Russia wants these lifted immediately, but they should be kept until Russia fulfills all the terms. So these are the terms, okay, and if you behave, we'll lift the sanctions. Now, maybe some of them will be lifted immediately to incentivize the Russians to go for this peace. But Russia's repeatedly pleaded for them to be relaxed. And then Moscow tells the absurd lie the sanctions don't hurt it. So why are you asking them to be ended? And why launch counter-sanctions? Oh, they're good for our economy. Why don't you say thank you then? So, you know, Ukraine is almost certainly going to be forced to make some concessions here. But these are the issues to be hammered out. What deal will be reached? How much of Ukraine's land will it get back, if any? These things are all imponderable. It depends when a ceasefire starts. Is it going to start the 20th of January, as Trump says it will? I very much doubt it. I think it'll start a few months after that, like, say, March, for example. And what's the military situation going to be then? You know, is Russia by that stage going to control 25% of Ukraine's territory, which would strengthen their bargaining position, or what? Would there be another mutiny, a collapse of the Russian army, or indeed, will the Ukrainian army desert en masse? And that would really change the dynamic. So it just much depends on how the military situation plays out for the next few months. Does Trump keep up arms shipments to begin with till Russia actually makes a ceasefire, at least, or what? Is it going to be talking whilst fighting, or ceasefire and then talking? And is the ceasefire going to be honoured? Now, Putin would want to say, okay, well, ceasefire, but no more Western arms shipments. It's obviously crucial to be kept up, because he'll be trying to rebuild his forces like mad. Anyway, thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.